Welcome to A Wealth of Women's Stories with Manjeet Minhas. We've got a special episode for you today. Yes, it's the best of season 3. My name is Marissa Sorenyeze, and I'll be your host today. A Wealth of Women's Stories podcast was created with the goal to share experiences of empowerment, breakthrough, and perseverance from women from all walks of life. For 3 seasons, we have been sharing stories and been a place where women's voices are not only heard, but celebrated. Today, for our Best of Season 3, we're sharing unaired content from the inspiring women who got into authentic and relatable conversations with our host, award-winning entrepreneur Manjeet Minhas. It's also a chance for us to share some highlights. So listen in and join us as we look back at some of the most powerful and insightful conversations between Manjeet and our guests. The views, information, and opinions expressed are those of the featured guests and not those of IG Wealth Management.
I'm Manjeet Minhas, one of Canada's top entrepreneurs, and so excited for you to join us today. Through A Wealth of Women's Stories, IG is carving out a space where women's voices are heard. If you're looking for insight and inspiration through powerful storytelling that will resonate with anyone looking for the answers to the questions that we as women ask ourselves, then this series is for you.
We begin with Paulina Cameron. Paulina is the CEO of The Forum, a Canadian national organization that educates, mentors, and connects women entrepreneurs to thrive. In addition to leading The Forum, Paulina has also written and published a best-selling book titled Canada 150 Women, Conversations with Champions, Leaders, and Luminaries that highlights inspiring stories from women. In conversation with Manjeet, Paulina touches on the importance of mentorship and how the power of mentorship helps women succeed.
What is your relationship with mentorship? How important is it for you? And do you think that it helps others with their path to success?
Yeah, it's been so important. I think over the years, you know, I've had formal mentors through like mentorship structures and programs. I certainly have a number of really informal mentors. I have mentors who don't even know that they're mentors to me, which isn't as creepy as I'm about to, as it sounds at first.
I get it.
Right? Like, I think also what has been really important for me and is really important for women are champions or sponsors. So these are people who are talking about you when you're not in the room, right? Like the good talking behind your back. So they are the ones where they hear about an opportunity or someone is asking for a quote or a recommendation, they're putting you forward. And I think males, men who are allies can be such incredible sponsors and champions because they're often in rooms where you are not in or other women might not even be in. And so this is their opportunity to really get you in there and put your name forward. So I think sponsors have also played a really and play a really incredible role for women.
I completely agree because I find even myself, it's hard to toot your own horn and it's hard to put your hand up no matter who you are. Yes, even for myself to say, yeah, I want to be at that table or yeah, I want to be involved in that. Like all of the big, incredible things and opportunities that I've had, I can literally tell you who said, hey, I am recommending you for this or you are going to do this or have you thought about this? And usually my immediate reaction is no. because it's uncomfortable to, often. Yeah. Even if deep down I'm like, oh my God, that'd be so cool. I want to do that. It is often scary to get uncomfortable, to have courage in order to push through that fear, in order to get out on the other side and look back and say, oh my God, like I'm so glad I said yes. I've learned so much. I've met so many neat people. It almost always is worth the time and the energy. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, it's always hard for people to say that I want that or to ask for that, no matter who you are.
Totally. And I really want to double click on something you said, Manjeet, because I want everyone to make sure they heard this. But even Manjeet sometimes feels like she can't put her hand up for things. And this is why there's so much we can do to like support one another. And I do sometimes think it may sound silly, but the encouragement of going, hey, have you thought about this? Have you considered putting your hand up for this? Or just telling someone, you know, I had someone the other day tell me this, and I've been meaning to text her ever since she said this to me. But I was helping her work through, her and her team work through some of the, them and their team work through some of the strategic pieces of their business. And at the end, they said to me, oh, you're just really good at what you do, which is really different than someone saying thank you, which they did as well. And I think I hear thank you more often. But when they said it that way, I was like, oh, that felt really great to hear. To someone just to echo back to you that piece of like, oh, you are really good at what you do, right? And it's such a simple thing we can offer one another of, hey, you're good at this. Put your name forward for this. Hey, consider this.
Yeah, because I think many of us, not that I really give two hoots about what people think about me, but I will say I'm human. So, you know, often, definitely there's that, you know, third channel running behind everybody's mind to say, or are they going to think I'm too bold, I'm too bossy, I'm too pushy, I'm too egotistical, like that I'm, you know, not creating space for others. But I think that you can only create space for others if you understand and are already there. And I think that it is one of those things that every woman is grappling with, because you want to be able to do things that you're passionate about, that help you learn, but then also make space for others, because mm-hmm. you understand that nobody does it themselves. And the fact that in the end of the day, it really isn't always about just us and our community and our family. It is about how did we do this together? Because nothing gets done on your own. And so it is something that takes time often to figure out, but leadership is a tough thing. It's not one dimensional for sure.
And, you know, we were talking about mentorship. I think that's one of, when mentorship is done well, it can help surface like maybe that third track and then validate it or disvalidate it really quickly, right? Like if there is the kind of space that you can have those conversations, I really, really early on in my leadership career, this is now probably at least 15 years ago, got the feedback from someone who saw me and experienced me in a team that I can and had the tendency, I used to to steamroll people and to be too forceful. And it's totally a track that used to be a third wall track. And I really sat with that. And of course, your knee-jerk reaction is defense against it. I'm like, no, I'm great. I'm bold. I'm amazing. Look at me do everything, right? And I will say that has been the most transformational feedback that I've gotten, because it was coming from a place of like deep support, caring. It was delivered in a kind way. And it then came subsequently with the support of like, okay, if you now know this about yourself, what are you going to do about it? And how are you going to not lose what's good about this and build other strengths to like come in and support around that? And hopefully my team would agree with this, but it has been something that I've worked on so much to really have a really deeply collaborative, human first leadership style now that feels like a polar opposite from that. But I don't think I could have worked on it as much as I did or really gotten to my leadership place had I not had that kind of feedback delivered again from someone who I knew cared about me, trusted me, was doing it from a place of supporting me as opposed to trying to put me down, or as opposed to from trying to just say, no, you're fine. When really they were like, oh God, someone take that away from her.
That honest feedback is so important. And I think that not only to get it, but to also give it, I think is you know, not always the easiest thing to do or to hear. But, you know, I think that my leadership style has definitely evolved too. Like it used to be very micromanaging, and it used to be, I needed to be a part of every decision. And then it's evolved to, because of a variety of reasons, but now it's more like, what do you need from me for you to do and be the best? And I think it's just so different, but it's evolved because I had one of my mentors and he told me that he used to do this. I thought it was so weird, but it's actually one of my favorite parts of the year is that when I ask 12 different people around me from, you know, different parts of my world to give me some honest feedback with some very pointed questions, sometimes it's super hard to hear. I definitely have to have a strong cocktail as I'm reading it. But it's often that exact same thing. Now that I know, does it matter to me? Can I be better at it? Is that something that is intentional? I think leadership is so complicated and always evolving, but it's important that we all understand that we all do have to learn from each other and that we all can do it differently, men and women. And there can be different relational ways, as you said, to do it.
Mm-hmm. I love that so much. I want your list of questions.
Manjeet's next guest is the head of financial planning at IG Wealth Management, Christine Van Kouwenberg. Christine was granted a King's Council designation by the province of Manitoba in 2023 in recognition of distinguished service to the practice of law in Manitoba. She made a career change from law to finance, and as part of her conversation with Manjeet, Christine spoke about the challenges and supports she experienced when she took that leap in her career.
And so 6 years of a law career, what really, that's a pretty big risk after having a comfortable career, I would say, in a life that maybe is a bit predictable, which nothing wrong with that. I was sold that bill of goods by my mom too. Taking that risk to jump into a new profession, a new industry, essentially, tell me a little bit about that decision-making tree that you went through to say, I'm going to, you know, take that leap of faith.
Oh, it was terrifying. I lost a lot of sleep that weekend or week where I was making the final decision. You know, it took a few weeks to sort of get there, but at the, you know, towards the end, I really was losing a lot of sleep. And, you know, I was never really sure that it was the right decision. But, you know, I thought to myself, this is a unique opportunity. If I don't take it, will I regret it? And if it really doesn't work out, I probably can go back to being a lawyer. And I think at a certain point, you need to sort of go a little bit out of your comfort zone and say, okay, well, am I actually going to do this one thing for my entire life? Or am I going to spread my wings a bit more? And even though I've been at IG now for more than 20 years, I've had some different roles and I have a more of an executive role now. But so I have to say, once I got to IG, if I hadn't had other learning opportunities and other challenges, I can't imagine that I would necessarily stayed here as long as I have. As it turned out, there's been lots of opportunities. But when I was making that specific decision, I thought to myself, like, it's a good time to take on a new challenge. I really didn't know exactly what I was going to find, but that was almost part of the excitement of it, right? Like, if you know, if it's too predictable,
right,
then, you know, it can get dry pretty quickly.
I totally agree with you. I get asked that a lot. And I think entrepreneurship is a little bit different that way in that you really don't know. Sometimes you're looking for some predictability because every day is an interesting storm. But for most people, they don't walk into wanting uncomfortableness or wanting a new challenge. And so I think that many of us think that we're not risk takers, but essentially we are because we're looking to, like you say, help people in different ways, learn not only about ourselves, but challenge ourselves. Did you have any mentors along the way that kind of helped guide you or that you could look at to say, hey, well, what would it be really like over there? And or can I get a helping hand?
Yeah. You know, I certainly had a lot of great mentors when I was in practice, and some of them had gone on to do different things. And so I'd seen some lawyers take their background and their expertise and do different things. And then, in fact, in a couple of cases, come back to law. And, you know, by that point, they had grown in different ways and they had ability to earn different type of business. And so, you know, I think it just showed me that, it, you know, you don't have to completely cling to one thing the entire time. You can jump back and forth a little bit and learn from it. And, okay, so maybe it's a mistake. Well, you learn from the mistakes, right?
Yeah.
So I had seen other people take jumps in and out of various industries and even if they had a negative experience, they always learned something from it. And I think that was something that, you know, I thought maybe this is a great opportunity. I should just at least try it. I didn't want to have any regrets that I hadn't tried it.
Yeah, I love that. It's a really unique perspective. I think as a lot of women, especially, you know, think of a singular role, an industry and or, you know, certification or whatever it might be.
You know, I think the thing I've learned the most from working as long as I have and having all sorts of female colleagues and, you know, just do what you really enjoy doing. Do something that gives you purpose and makes you, you know, want to get up in the morning and feel like you're going to enjoy your day. Making money is obviously a big part of why people work, right, but it can't be the sole reason. And, you know, look beyond the careers that you have specific training in. You could have several careers over the course of decades. And you need to allow yourself to, you know, take a few chances. I'm not saying take reckless chances, but, you know, don't just settle. You know, I've met so many capable women and I've had to say, look, oh my gosh, you're very, very smart. You'll learn, you'll figure it out when you get there, right? You know, you don't know everything the first day, but You don't want to settle just because that's all you know. Be prepared to broaden your horizons a bit, because the most important thing is you want to be able to do work that you enjoy and that you love, and then it won't really feel like work.
Completely agree.
Manjeet's next guest launched the Seven Virtues Beauty Inc. that sources organic, fair trade essential oils used for perfumes from nations rebuilding after war or strife. The founder, Barb Stegman, has been named Canada's 100 Most Powerful Women in Canada. Barb is the author of the best-selling book, The Seven Virtues of a Philosopher Queen, as well as a subject of the feature-length documentary, Perfume War. In her conversation with Manjeet, the two spoke about well-being and self-care. Listen in as Barb shares her mantra of get mad, take a bath, have a nap.
Why do you think that self-care and self-love, which I believe they're hand in hand, are important?
They're huge. I think you've got to take time every day to read the books you love, exercise your body. I mean, your body, mind, soul, take care of all three. Often we take too much concern about one part, whether it's the intellect, the soul, or the body. But what we have to do is take care of all three the same. The body shouldn't get more attention than the soul, and the mind shouldn't get more attention than the body. It's all about all three in harmony. So, you know, I take my walk, my power walk, I do my Pilates or my workout, I have my stuff here. I like to get my sleep. I have to get my 8 hours sleep. You know, I surround myself with people that I love, and I think that's really important. And I treat each day like this could be the last, so it's got to be the best. So even everything you do has to be the most delicious coffee. You know, and I'm probably the fussiest person in a restaurant in a good way. I'll tip well. But I want everything to be lovely. I don't compromise. And even the table I sit at, I will ask for a table that will make me feel like I'm happier or having a better experience, because if this is my only day, I want it to be great. And so if you choose to buy one of my products, I want you to feel like it's the loveliest product ever. And that's, everything should be that way. And then if, heaven forbid, tomorrow we're not here,
right,
it was the best day ever, and we weren't living for tomorrow or for next vacation. You know, often I think we can fall into that. When the house is renovated, I'll be happy. Or when we take that holiday, I'll be, when I lose those 8 pounds, I'll be okay. It's like, right, no, nothing's going to change. It's all right now, today, and learn to love all of it. The extra 8 pounds, the bad kitchen, the crooked cupboards, or whatever. Learn to love it all. And everything looks different. I think we enjoyed that during the pandemic, even though we had some loss, we actually got off that hamster wheel, right? And then all of a sudden we're all back on it again. It's like, to kind of keep a few things that I learned. One of the things, my mantra during the pandemic was, get mad, take a bath, have a nap. And it's worked for me. You know, get mad. If something's taken from you, let it out, and then go take a bath and stare at the trees, turn off your phone, read some Seneca or Plato, and then take a nap and let your subconscious mind sort out everything. And just from doing that one maneuver, I was able to avoid a very big mistake in launching with a chain in the UK, and instead got to launch with Sephora EU, 13 countries and the UK, because I had forgotten in the weeds, get in the weeds. I had forgotten that I had a preliminary call with Sephora France long before I launched in the US and Canada during the Accelerate program while they were rebuilding me. And they said, you know, go away, see how you do, and come back and share your numbers. I forgot all about it. And I had this call with this gentleman during the pandemic. You know, the stores are shut. What are you going to do? And I was going to launch with this chain in the UK. And at the end of the call, he said something like, you know, my brand lifts your brand. I said, of course, as partners. And then I said, my brand lifts your brand. He said, you know, he said, all women think that about their brand.
Oh.
So back to the virtue of beauty. I kept my power, my dignity. I wrote an email and thanked them so much for their time. Lovely to get to know you all, but we're going to pass. This was during the pandemic with our 600 doors shut down. And then I got mad. I was so mad. I took a bath. I had a nap and woke up from my nap and remembered that woman. And I wrote her right away. And I said, we're number one in Canada, number two in the US. She immediately connected me with her merchants. And then we just launched in the UK. And I wouldn't have been able to if I had been with his chain.
Right.
And so it was really interesting. This get mad, take a bath, have a nap thing that I kind of developed during the pandemic has helped me navigate in the most astounding ways, where I'm really tapping into my subconscious, taking time for myself, turning off the world. And I highly recommend you do that. So when something happens, someone's rude to you, or something goes off the rails, or something doesn't meet a deadline, get mad, take a bath, have a nap. And I swear you will wake up with solutions, because you're going to just turn off all that confusion and fear, and you're going to take control of the situation and have that self-love and self-respect for your divine, for your soul, for your mind. And it will reward you. I think if we stay in motion and stay busy all day, we don't get outcomes, because we're staying busy, looking busy like a busy bee. But stop and get mad and take a bath. And suddenly.
Mine is close. Mine is get mad, have a bath, have a cocktail. And then
like that too. Okay, then that's in there too. I'm going to have to, yeah.
I'm one who can't nap. So I instead, and I think it's one of those things that whatever calms you down, right? Or whatever takes you out of the situation. And for me, you know, for everybody, it's something different. It could be have a cup of tea. For me, it's have a cocktail.
Oh, no, I'm with you on the girl. I'm from Nova Scotia. There are many cocktails happening here after the nap.
And it goes along with kind of, which I've heard you say before, self-love is not an indulgence, it's a necessity. And I think the more that we practice that, you are able to see the outcomes of that. It won't happen necessarily in a day, not every day and not every week, but it is something that if you make it a practice, it is something that you can't live without in a good way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Nailed it. Yeah. And it's just the daily practice of it and quieting down those noises that are in our minds just by osmosis. From social media, family, well-meaning friends, all that noise, right. And really just listening to your own instincts and reminding yourself that you have great instincts. I mean, even just by saying that, you're setting a path. When you say, I have really great instincts and I trust them, you will start doing it. It's that visualization, that statement. So for me, the self-love is the statements we make and not making those statements that, oh, you know, if you were 8 pounds lighter, you'd do better. I mean, all that noise comes in. It all tries to come in. Mm-hmm. And you have to drown it out and get back to, I have really great instincts. I'm really proud of that. And then it gets better and it sharpens and it hones, you know?
Manjeet's next guest, Jennifer Rainey, took her favorite word from when she was in her 20s and turned it into a fashion-forward brand in her 40s. Jennifer told Manjeet that what leads to success is loving what you do. And judging by the success of her fashion brand, Malvados, Jennifer is right. In this conversation, Jennifer and Manjeet talk about how it's never too late or too early to become an entrepreneur.
I find it fascinating, you know, according to the Harvard Business Review, that the average age of a successful startup founder is 42. And so you were 46, and I've always believed that it's never too late and you're never too old to chase a dream and to start a business. But it's not usually where people think that entrepreneurship starts. I think we all read in the papers and, you know, online, and we hear all these stories of, you know, 20, 15, 20, 25-year-olds. Well, I was one of them too. That start businesses and that it's sometimes too late. It's very rare, but a lot of the big entrepreneurs of our lifetime have actually started later in their career. And so why do you think it was an advantage for you to start later in your career?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we see a lot of press out there with young founders because it's so fascinating when you hear of a, you know, somebody in their 20s creating some multi-billion dollar company. But really, the majority of entrepreneurs, really successful, big entrepreneurs, are older. And I have always felt that, you know, learning is so important. And I always try and teach our staff and our interns this, that it's a really great way to become successful, to get paid to learn. You know, I went through years of working for massive fashion companies and learning so much about marketing and sales and production that saved me years and years and years of mistakes I would have made starting a brand if I hadn't done those years. So I think those early years, when you're young, if you can hone in on what you want to do and then work for some of the best that do that, you are so far ahead. And like you said, some of the, you know, biggest success stories are from older founders like Chip Wilson, 42, starting Lululemon. You know, Vera Wang started her company at 40. Martha Stewart started at 50. So it's all of that experience that goes into creating an incredible brand later in life.
Yeah. And I think I know for myself that as I'm getting older, I'm more patient. I know how to fail. I definitely have a lot of more awareness of my talents and skills. You know, naivety is sometimes good, but not always when you think you're the best at everything. And so is ego. It's a fascinating thing that as you get older, you have a little more clarity, I think, also mm-hmm. on your values.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I think you really can't be a successful leader without embedding your values into what you do. And, you know, what you stand for, your core beliefs are really what drives your interactions with people and your decision making, and they go hand in hand. So I've always felt that it was really, really important. And again, going back to authenticity, you know, you can't be an authentic leader and an authentic brand without embedding what's authentically important to you.
Are there some mottos that you live by in your professional career and your personal life?
I would say one of my mottos is good luck is a return on positive energy. I really, really believe in that. And I feel like being positive, you know, it impacts you, everyone around you, everything you do. So I'm very positive.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think being an optimist, but also having that mindset does change a lot. It really mm-hmm. does. It not only yourself, your mood, the way you have an outlook on life, but those around you. And I think sometimes it sounds so simple that it's underestimated.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's just funny when people say, oh, you're so lucky. Like they'll look at things that, you know, have happened in my life. Like it all just sort of fell into place, but it really hasn't. Everything has happened for a reason and a decision has gotten me to where I am today. But I will say that I've always been positive. And I think when you're positive, people want to be around you. You know, people want to help you. It's one of the most important characteristics you can have is being positive.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more.
Manjeet closed out season 3 with a discussion on diversity, equity, and inclusion with Camille Dundas, who is the principal educator for the Idea Practice, Inc. Camille is also the editor-in-chief of Canada's largest Black online magazine, ByBlacks.com, and has been named among the top 100 Black Canadian accomplished women. Camille specializes in allyship and anti-racism education, which sparked an engaging conversation with Manjeet on the topic of knowing your worth.
So I want to jump back to something you said when talking about your childhood. You talked about you love to read choose your own adventure books. And so, you know, the reader in choose your own adventure books has some autonomy in where the story goes. And so why do you think these books resonate with you? And do you think that your interest in those books suggests that even at a young age, you were someone who was looking to make a change in the world?
That's such an interesting question, because I think at age, you know, 7 or 8, sitting in the library, those were the books that gave me the most power. Hmm. Because I could choose, even though there were limited choices, I could choose and I could determine, you know, different outcomes. I could have different experiences within one context. It didn't have to be, you know, that beginning and end. It could be multiple ways. And I think the way that applies in adulthood is that there isn't one path to equity. There isn't one right way. There are multiple right ways. There are some wrong ways, but there isn't one way that fits all of us. And I get that that's why it makes this work so difficult, but that is also why it makes it rewarding, because we are widening the gates, not lowering the bar as some of us feel, but we are widening the gates when we apply equity.
And so do you think your ability to choose your own way or to venture is something that you've seen continued on throughout your life and career?
100%. I think I am a walking example of why you don't have to stay in your lane. Mm. If I had listened to that, I would never have had the courage to leap from being a journalist to being in tech. I was petrified. The first day of work, I thought to myself, you should just quit now before you get too deep into this, before it gets really embarrassing, because you have no idea what you're doing. I remember texting my friend being like, what are they saying? I literally could not understand so much of the jargon, so many acronyms. Right. I felt way out of depth. until I thought, okay, there's a reason they wanted you here. Revisit mm-hmm. that. You are a storyteller no matter where you go, no matter what role you take on. Your superpower is telling stories and reaching people, getting people to understand complex ideas in a very simple way. And so lean into that. Learn the other stuff, do the hard work, but lean into what your superpower is. And once you are grounded by what your true gift is, then you can go anywhere. You can put me in any environment and I will lean on that superpower and I will thrive.
Yeah, storytelling is definitely universal to all different industries and career path. And but also that, you know, that decision to be and have impact, I think, is really important. And so why do you think it's important that everybody be aware that their decisions do matter and that they do have impact no matter where they end up and what their talent and skill they believe is? Because that's not always how the outside world sees it.
Decisions have ripple effects. And what came to mind when you mentioned that was the first big client that I had when I started consulting full time, a very large financial firm. And my point of contact was a woman. And that part's important because of what she did for me, because of a decision that she made. She asked me to submit my quote, which I did. And then she asked me to hop on a call and said, "We would like to hire you. Your proposal is amazing, but I want you to resubmit your quote because your quote is too low."
Ah.
She said, "I know what I pay for services like this, and you're undervaluing your services." This is just based off of her interacting with me a few times. I think they had hired me in the past to do like a keynote or something. So she had some experience with me, but very limited experience with me. It's not like we were close, like we were friends, but she saw what I brought to the table as valuable. And she decided to put herself out there to let me know. And I say put herself out there because she could have very well just said, "Great, we got a low quote. It's under budget. My boss is going to be happy." For all I know, her boss could have been like, "Why did you do that?" Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she decided to tell me that I was not valuing myself where I should be valued. And I resubmitted the quote. And to this day, I will not hesitate to do the same for somebody else. And that's what I mean by ripple effects. A few years after that, I hired a young Black woman to do some writing for me. And she gave me a quote and she said, "Oh, if it's too high, we can." I said, stop right there. I said, "First of all, don't ever say that again. Don't ever submit a number and then tell someone you're willing to negotiate it. You tell me what your price is. And if I can't afford it, I will say yes, but I will not ask you to lower your quote. I will just tell you that's above my budget. But do not start off already undervaluing what you have submitted." And so I've done the same thing. I said to her, "No, this is actually too low. Here is the going rate for this. Here's what I've paid for this in the past. So this is what I'm going to pay you."
And I think that unfortunately is a bit of a syndrome that not only women, but people of the BIPOC community have, that sometimes they want it so badly, they undervalue what their worth is. And they're actually working against themselves, not for themselves.
Absolutely.
But, they don't often have somebody that speaks up for them and, or, you know, gives them a helping hand to say, "No, this is where you need to be, should be, but this is, you're worth it. You're worth it." Right.
Yeah.
And I think that, that is brave on both sides because it often is new and it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And not everybody wants to be uncomfortable. It's easier just to say yes or no, one word, right. Mm-hmm. Rather than getting into the discussion of it.
Here we are. What a great season of A Wealth of Women's Stories podcast. This is a place where women's stories are shared, where stories of breakthrough, empowerment, and perseverance are heard and celebrated and amplified, where connections are made and community built. We're so glad you've been a part of it. We thank our host, Manjeet Minhas, who brings out the best in our guests with her conversations. We thank our incredible guests for authentically sharing and inspiring other women through this time together. And we especially thank you, our listener. Thank you for listening, for downloading, streaming, sharing, and telling others about A Wealth of Women's Stories. We hope our discussions here have provided you inspiration, thoughts, and created discussions in your life too. While we close off season 3 of the podcast, I invite you to go back and explore the previous 2 seasons if you haven't already had a chance. There are so many stories waiting for your discovery. On behalf of Manjeet Minhas, our production team, and everyone at the podcast, thank you. I'm Marissa Sorenese. Thank you for listening. This has been A Wealth of Women's Stories, hosted by Manjeet Minhas and presented by IG Wealth Management. The views, information, and opinions expressed are those of the featured guests and not those of IG Wealth Management.